Hello and welcome to another episode of the Inspiring Leadership Podcast, brought to you by Pursue Limited, empowering people to flourish across the global education sector by harnessing the power and the potential of coaching. My name is Nicholas Mackay, professional certified coach and director of Pursue, and I'm going to be your host as we aim to bring you some of the best thinking in education and beyond, gaining insights into inspiring leadership. So let's get straight into today's episode, and I'm delighted to welcome Hannah Rankin, WBA and IBO Super Welterweight World Boxing Champion and professional pursuanist. Hannah became the first Scottish female world champion and the only female to headline an event at the OVO Hydro, Scotland's largest indoor arena. Hannah continues to play the bassoon and also teaches music as well. Hannah, thank you so much for joining me today.
Oh, thank you very much for having me.
First of all, congratulations on your recent titles. How does it feel to be a world champion?
Oh, it's amazing. You know, when I won the world titles in Tottenham Hotspur down here in London, it was an amazing night for me. But being able to go and defend them at home in Glasgow in front of, you know, all my Scottish fans was just an incredible experience. So, yeah, very, very proud.
And there's about 4,500 people there, wasn't there?
Yeah, crazy night.
Bringing out the crowds, that's fantastic. So I suppose what I'm quite intrigued by, obviously my background is in music and I was a bassoonist, and I saw that you were a bassoonist and a boxer. So I suppose my first question is around, how does that work between music and boxing?
So when I moved down to London to do my master's at the Royal Academy of Music, I was doing Thai boxing at home just for fitness. And I did Taekwondo when I was a kid, so I've always been drawn back to combat sports for training and fitness. And I got into the gym here down in London, and I met my coach, Noel Callan, and he was teaching the boxing classes. And again, I was just doing it for fitness then. And I just really fell in love with it. It's just, I love the discipline of it. And, you know, it takes a lot of practice. It's very much like being a musician. I like the focus and discipline. And I really got into it. I was doing some white collar fights for charity. And then I thought, you know what? I really love this. I want to take it to the next step. And so that's when I turned professional. And all the while I was doing my master's degree at the same time. So they just worked really well together. And for me, it's all about performance, really, at the end of the day. One of them, I'm on stage in my bassoon playing with an orchestra or whatever under the lights, and hopefully everyone's happy to hear me play Mozart or whatever. And on the other hand, I'm in the ring under the lights and trying not to get punched in the face. So it's kind of it's all about performing on the moment. I really enjoy that sort of adrenaline rush.
I was going to ask you, I suppose, I mean, I've had a bit of experience playing professionally with the bassoon, and, you know, I've had a couple of auditions where I've been going there, my hands have been going a little bit, you know, and then your breathing goes, isn't it? And when your breathing goes, you know, oh, no, this is going to be a bit difficult. So what are some of the commonalities, I suppose, in terms of performance between being a professional musician at that level and also being a professional boxer?
Well, one of the things that people don't really know about me is that I used to really struggle a lot with performance anxiety for playing solo. Yeah, for playing solo. So I used to really struggle, you know, like you were saying, your hands shaking, they're sweating, your heart racing, can't catch your breath. You know, I used to be really, really nervous. And I was much better with orchestra and chamber music, but it was just the solo stuff. I used to let my mind run away with myself and get really, really nervous and panicky. And so much so, in my undergraduate, I actually had to run off stage at one point. I performed amazingly, apparently, but I don't remember a minute of it. And then I had to run off stage and I thought I was going to be sick. You know, I was so nervous. And actually, ironically, when I started boxing, and even though it was just white collar for charity at the beginning, boxing put it all in perspective for me, because suddenly I realized that people were coming to listen to me play the bassoon and play some beautiful music, and they were there to appreciate it. They wanted to hear some lovely music. Whereas with boxing, you're on stage, it's like a stage, but you're in a boxing ring, and no one's going to punch you in the face when it comes to playing the bassoon. You know, there's no sort of pressure for that there. So I think it kind of just put things in perspective for me and really helped me to start to enjoy being a performer. You know, a lot of my performance preparation for music is the same as boxing. So actually my mental prep is the same. I do a lot of visualization. And I also do a lot of breathing techniques to help control my heart rate. These are things that cross over really nicely. And obviously boxing requires a lot of rhythm, which comes from my music side of things. So even when I first started boxing, my coach, he was like, well, I want you to put that combination to a rhythm in your head, so then you can get it right. So you're putting the weight on the right punch for me. And I was like, that's a really good way of thinking about it. And it really kind of like clicked in with my mind on how to fix things and how to put it all together. So yeah, no, for me, there's a lot of similarities, but I can totally see why people go, there's nothing the same there. But yeah, no, that's how I think about it. And it's great. There's lots of things that cross over.
So in terms of visualizations, because we hear a lot about this in sports, you know, especially, I mean, what do you mean by visualization?
So for visualization with boxing, obviously, I visualize every possible way that I think the fight could go. I visualize my opponent being an absolute giant and a monster. I visualize it. And over the time during the training camp, I visualize them getting smaller and smaller and more manageable. You know, I visualize getting knocked down in the fight and how I get back up again. But I also visualize how I'm going to win. And I visualize the moment of myself getting my arm raised and the referee shouting out that I'm the winner. And I visualize that every single day. And it's something that, you know, before this one, so obviously when I won the world titles, it was and the new, and this time it was and still. And every morning, got up and visualized the fight and myself winning, my arm getting raised. And I'd always sit at the side of my bed, raise my arm and go, and still. And that's exactly how I practice it. And so much visualization is so important, because the more you do it, when you get into fight night, it becomes more just like you're redoing something you've done a million times before. And it's such an important tool and a great technique for improving your confidence and helping you to prepare for any sort of stressful situation.
And you'd actually physically do that and put my hand over my
leg,
would you?
Oh, yeah, okay. I do. I do it as well when I'm on the treadmill, you know, so the treadmill is kind of like my downtime if I go for a run. That is, I like to put my headphones on, zone out a little bit. But during training camp, I put my headphones on and I visualize the fight and I visualize everything. And I often, like, you know, I'll put my hand up and I'll be like, that's me winning. And it's that feeling, and that feeling, it becomes very natural. It's what you expect.
That's fantastic. And I love the idea of the rhythms in terms of those combinations like you're doing. Can you give me like an example of what that would look like in terms, not that I'm an aficionado of boxing, but what that kind of thing that looked like?
So if you're thinking about like a combination, maybe like a double jab cross, but you want the cross to be the more powerful one, you probably accent the cross. So that'd be the accent note in the rhythm. So if you're putting it together and you maybe make the double jab staccato, you know, you make it short. That little way of thinking about it. And it's just, it was really clever that my coach managed to think a bit outside the box and like lock into something in my mind that was something completely different to what he understands. But it really helped me to learn.
And you said you've had the same coach for all your career.
Yeah, my whole career. So I always say it's from nothing to everything, because we've literally come from a bassoonist that did some boxing for fitness to two times world champion. So yeah, 17 fights together professionally and maybe 6 white collar fights. So yeah, not that many in total, but we've done some great things.
So I suppose in terms of coaching, again, some of the stuff that I do a lot of in terms of boxing, you know, what do you think makes a good coach?
A good coach is somebody that's able to really understand you as a person, and also to be able to deal with, like, you know, if you can't understand something they're trying to explain to you, they can actually go outside the box and think of another way to show you how to achieve it. I think that's so important, especially that I have that with my teaching. It's one of my favorite things about teaching. I love to figure out what makes people tick and what they enjoy, because there's a way of getting something across to everybody. It's just some people understand it one way and other people understand it a different way. And as a teacher and as a coach, you should be able to figure that out.
Oh, that's really interesting, isn't it? That, again, that link between teaching. In terms of teaching, how much of that do you do now?
I used to do a lot of teaching, but I don't do quite as much anymore just because I can't fit it in with all the training that I've got to do and everything else. So I have a few pupils, one in particular who I'm particularly proud of, because he got into the junior department of the college, and you know, he's a great little student, but he also just loves his music. He's just very passionate about it. And that's what I enjoy. I enjoy to teach people when they're passionate about something, because it's a real pleasure. It's not a chore to teach somebody like that. You know, they just love it.
And how often do you play the bassoon nowadays?
It comes in phases. Obviously, my training camps are 10 to 12 weeks. So in that time, I cut down the music that I'm doing, because I physically just don't have time to practice as much as I want to. So I wouldn't want to take on any extra work or performing work if I didn't have the time to practice for it. But, you know, I've just finished my fight. So I've been speaking to my quintet actually this morning. I'm hoping to get some more work in. We do a lot of work with a company called Live Music Now. Okay. And they take music into schools and into care homes. And it's a really great part of my job that I actually really enjoy. So fingers crossed we'll have some gigs coming up.
Fantastic. Is that the same quintet that you had at music college, or is it people that you've met afterwards?
Yes, we all met together at the Royal Academy of Music. So it's the Coriolis Quintet. So we have a great group of us, and we like to do lots of different things, but we really like the interactive concerts because it means you get like a real feedback from the audience. And often, like, the one thing about kids is that they're very honest, and that's what I appreciate the most. You know, they're very honest. They're saying, I don't like that one. So we'll do another one. So, yeah. And it keeps you on your toes. You have to be very creative, and, you know, because children's attention span, like young children, their attention span is not always that long. So you can't go off on something for a 20-minute movement of a piece because they're just going to drift off. It has to be exciting for them and something they enjoy listening to.
It's funny. How did you find music college?
So it's a really funny thing because when I started my undergraduate, I think like every other undergraduate that was playing a musical instrument wanted to be an orchestral musician. Yeah. We all want to have a job in an orchestra. That's what we all think we want to do. And actually, the most difficult thing about being a musician is actually you need a portfolio. You need to be able to do loads of different things. So you can have a quintet or some chamber group. You have to do orchestral playing. Now you might focus on Baroque, or you might be more into your opera. You know, it just depends. And then, of course, you've got all the teaching side of things. Are you doing one-on-one lessons? Are you in a school? Are you doing group lessons? Are you able to actually go in and teach en masse for whole classes? So as a musician, it's that you go in with the dream of just being an orchestral musician, but actually you have to do so much more to actually be a musician as a whole.
Yeah, it's a strange one. I mean, it's so specialised. In some respects, looking back, and as I mentioned before we started recording, I went to Trinity College of Music, which at that time was just down the road from the Academy. So we had to go up to the Royal Academy to have a few drinks, etc. Those are the days. In terms of specialism, so all my friends were kind of doing different things, meeting different people, having different experiences. And, you know, it was very serious very quickly, I found, in terms of music college.
Definitely. I think because it is so specialized and, you know, it's sort of like the elite level of playing that you have to be at already when you just start your first year, because the competition is so high to get into a place like that. You know, I was the only one in my year that went to the Royal Academy of Music that got in for that year. So for my master's, and it's just one of those things where you don't really think about it until it's later on when you leave and you think, actually, I was a group of a very small number of students that were given places to work in these schools. And I think one of the hardest things is the pressure as well to deal with, because especially as a bassoonist, and you'll know this, is like if you're playing principal, it's all on you when it comes to the solo in the orchestra. And if you're a string player, you can be a rank and file string player. But as a wind player, you are a soloist, and that's how it is. So there's a lot of pressure right from the very, very beginning. But I think, you know, I thrive under pressure. And it's one of those things, as I've got older, I've really come to appreciate it more, especially with my boxing. One of the phrases I always say is pressure is a privilege. And you wouldn't feel under pressure if you didn't do something great, if you weren't doing something where other people were thinking, I want to be like that, I wish I could do that. So when you feel pressure, it's a privilege to feel it, because other people think that you're doing amazing things. And I think it's a good way of thinking about it. And this also helps when you're starting to feel, oh, there's all this stuff happening and everything's getting on top. It's a privilege, and it's a good way of kind of controlling it.
I suppose, you know, we hear a lot about stress nowadays and people kind of coming away from stress. I suppose with what you do, you actually walk towards that stress in terms of, you know, working your body, potentially getting hit, these kind of things. So how do you prepare yourself for that?
So I think the mental training side of things is really, really important. Obviously, physically, you need to be fit. And one of my things has always been that I will not be outworked. And I won't be outworked whether I'm doing something with my bassoon, whether I'm doing something that's a public speaking event or anything like that. I'll never be underprepared and I won't be outworked, because I think you can achieve so much yourself before you even have any expectations put on you. And your own expectations should be the highest for yourself, I think, to be perfectly honest. So there's a lot of things that you need to do mentally, prepping yourself for the whole occasion, being aware of what you need to achieve before you actually get there. Because for me, obviously at world title level, there's a lot more that comes with that. So there's a lot more, media work. And often when you're getting ready to fight, you're coming down to a particular weight, you're grumpy, you're hungry, and, your body's a bit sore, you've been working really, really hard. So you've just got to learn how to speak in front of a camera, and also be aware of the fact that you're probably going to be a little bit short-tempered. So just to be a bit more patient with yourself. And also, be aware that there's going to be a public workout. People are going to be wanting to take photos of you. And it, for me, when I had my last fight, I had this amazing situation where I had a public workout in St. Enoch Centre in Glasgow. And I had people from all different backgrounds, all different places, from all ages, right down from like 4 or 5 year olds, all the way to your grandparents, wanting to take photos, wanting to come and talk to me. And, you just got to take it all in, because it's an incredible feeling. But mentally, I knew it was going to be a busy week, and I prepared myself for that by actually going through it in my mind. I was like, right, this is what we're doing. This is what I'm going to do. I have everything written down. I have a training diary. That's how I do it.
I suppose a bit of a personal question here, Hannah, but what's driving you to do this?
So I think for me, I was very unfortunate to lose my mum when I started my master's here in London. I came down for my first term, got home, and she actually got diagnosed with cancer. And 6 months later, she passed away. It was really, really sudden. And to be honest, my mum was one of my best friends. She was my biggest hero. She was my biggest critic. She was the first person to tell me that I was doing amazingly with my music, but the first person to tell me when it could have been better, and I appreciated that. My mom was really young, so we were actually quite close in age. And, when she passed away, it was just a huge, huge, loss for me in my life in all angles. When you lose somebody, it changes you, gives you a different sort of perspective on things. It makes you think, well, for me anyway, it made me think, I'm only going to be here for as long as I'm here. So I want to put as much as I can do into everything that I'm doing. So at that time, boxing was really important to me. It was there, I had a family in the gym that were not associated with my own family. And I think sometimes when you're going through grief, it's sometimes good to have a different people around you, because they're not associated with memories and things that might potentially upset you. And also, boxing gave me that sort of outlet for my frustration and my anger. And it was when I worked out in the bag, it was like that one split second where I could feel like I was so tired, I couldn't think about anything. So because boxing was there that time, I felt, it gave me everything I needed to help support me. And so for me now is that I want to give everything back to it. And I want to show that it doesn't matter what age you fall in love or with a passion, get a passion for something, that you can go and follow that dream. Everyone thought I was crazy. Hannah's going professional in her 20s in a sport that she never even did as a kid. So for me, it was all about giving back to something that was there for me in a really difficult time. And seeing how far I could go, because like I said, I you don't know how long you're going to be here for, so you might as well make the most of it.
And thank you for being so honest there, Hannah. Really appreciate it. I suppose in terms of your training camps, you said 10 to 12 weeks. Sounds a bit brutal to me. So kind of what goes into that then?
Well, obviously, being at championship level, you need more time for these things, and you don't fight as regularly as you might have done when you first started out. So I was known for being a very active fighter, fought 3 to 4 times a year. But now as a world champion, it's maybe twice a year, maybe three if I'm lucky, but it's more too. That comes with other things as well, the costs of fighting for a world title as well. I've got two now. Finding opponents at the right level, at the right time, and big venues and big occasions. So all of these things your promoter has to take into account as well. So there's a bit more time. But yeah, 10 to 12 weeks that's my actual camp time. I have a pre-camp where I get my body into shape. It's not really into shape. It's more kind of strengthening certain things, like little weaknesses that I want to work on with my body, and stuff that my strength and conditioning S&C kind of guy has given me stuff for, as has my coach. A little we will use the time to build on technique for the ring as well. But during the actual camp time, you're training 6 days a week, twice a day. And two lots of that tend to be for sparring. So, you know, sparring with fighting with other people, practice, basically what you call practice fighting. So, because you need to practice these things before you get in there. So there's that. And I do a lot of traveling for that. When I started out, there was just wasn't that many females in the UK. So I traveled abroad. I used a lot of my own kind of savings to take myself abroad to help myself get as much experience as possible. Now I choose when I need to travel, you know, for certain things, or I bring people here, which is a nice situation to be in. And also during that time, I'll have cardio. Obviously, I'll do sprints and running. That all needs to be done. And I do stuff on the watt bike that I was telling you about this morning. Yeah. That wasn't as brutal as it normally is. Pretty much chilled as far as I was concerned. And then there's bags and pads and technique work with your coach. So it is full on. And of course, the diet comes into part of that as well. So, and the recovery side of it. So there's a lot to do when you're a full-time athlete.
It sounds it. And your weight is welterweight. Is that right?
Super welter for now. Yeah.
So yeah. Is it easy to kind of go up and down weights in boxing?
So it's a bit different for girls. So we tend to fluctuate a lot more between the weights because there's less of us and the opportunities come up over the different weights. So whereas the guys tend to, there's more of them. So they can stay at their weight, work their way up. Whereas for me, I box at all different weight classes. I've been at welter, super welter, middle, super middle. I'm not big enough to be a middleweight. You know, and I fought that way, but I'm just really not big enough. And the super middle was a one-off situation. It was actually my first chance fighting for a world title, first time in America. So this is a big thing that I'm a massive fan of, is that you take opportunities when they come up because you never know where you're going to go. So, like, I've done loads of crazy things. I've gone to some amazing places. But that one, when I took that fight, it was my first time in America. I started to build an American fan base. People started to know a little bit more who I was. The fight was meant to be on Fox Sports, but the ironic situation was during, at that time, women's boxing wasn't really that popular. Right. So they got to the women's fight and they turned the cameras off and said, people don't want to watch women's boxing. And we were the only title fight on the card. It was crazy. But so I've gone between the weight classes, but now I'm really, truly, I can box super welterweight. It's my division. It's where I'm world champion. I could drop down to welterweight as well, but it does depend, obviously, on situations and opportunities that come up.
And I suppose in terms of female boxing, you know, everyone speaks about it. Katie Taylor, isn't it? And the fight that we've recently had and the exposure everyone's getting in. You're getting 4,500 people at Scotland's biggest indoor arena. You know, are we at a place now where things are changing in relation to your sport?
Absolutely. This is the most exciting time to be a female boxer, I personally think. And the fact that I'm at the forefront of that change is incredible. It's so exciting. Like you said, the Katie Taylor and Amanda Serrano fight at Madison Square Garden was incredible. You know, like, they sold it out. They were the main event. It was like the first $1 million payday for women. It was great. And then 2 weeks later, I made history in Scotland, you know, headlining a massive arena at home. And for that to happen within like a 3 week period, would have been completely unheard of. Like, a woman headlining a stadium, mad, you know. Whereas now it's really taken a huge step forward. And ironically, I have to thank the pandemic for that, because as I keep saying to people, I'm like, during the pandemic, we had a captive audience sitting at home. They had nowhere else to go. And suddenly Matchroom and Sky Sports decided they were going to put on some women's fights in the Garden when Eddie was running those shows. But it wasn't just any old fights. They were world title fights. So they were really high level, exciting matchups. And people didn't have an excuse to not watch it. So often it used to be when you were at the boxing, you know, we'll go to the boxing and the guys would be like, oh, it's a chicks fight. We'll go to the bar. Standard statement. but now it's like people sitting at home and they're like, oh, actually, really enjoying this because it's fast. It's 2 minute rounds, high paced. And we were just so excited to have the opportunity to be on TV that we all delivered. All of the girls that fought during the pandemic, you know, we just put on a show because we were like, this is our chance. This is how we're going to do it. And we all just put on amazing fights and everyone was talking about it. And suddenly as well, like, we've got a lot more people who, like, you know, from the female side supporting it. So you've got lots of the young girls now following it. Mums, aunties, they're all like into it. I want to watch the women's fight. That's like, I'm going to watch the boxing tonight, you know, and that's unheard of. So yeah, it's been a real change around for us, and it's only going to increase now and only going to get better.
Do you get a lot of younger people, maybe girls, not even boys, whatever, you know, fan mail and getting hold of you and saying what an inspiration you are, etc.?
Yeah, I do. I do get a lot of messages, which is really, really nice. And actually, it was one of the strangest things when I went over into the boxing world, because I've never experienced that sort of thing before. And people telling me, you know, oh, you're my daughter's favorite boxer. And I was thinking, this is mad. People know who I am. Just really, really crazy. But it's also nice to get messages from parents to say, you know, you're inspiring my children and they're getting involved in the sport and you've really helped increase their confidence and just little things like that. Because for me, what I want my legacy to be in the sport is just that. I want to inspire the younger generation to get involved in this sport. I also want to inspire anybody to get involved in boxing, because like I said, it doesn't matter what age you are. You can do anything you want to do. You just need to follow it and get some support and, you know, trust yourself, because usually you're the best person to make that decision. And boxing is a great way to stay fit. You don't have to actually do any sort of physical fighting. Just the fitness side of it is incredible. And funnily, a funny story. So yesterday I was actually speaking on the BBC Sports Sound in Scotland and I had to get a taxi to the studio and I got off the train station. I got to the taxi and the guy was like, "Hello, champ, how are you doing?" I didn't know he knew me. And he was like, "Oh, I've been following you. My son's got really into boxing." And he was so excited. He's like, "It's been a huge step. And the whole family are really into boxing now. We're all keeping super fit. I've lost loads of weight." And I just didn't realize I'd had that sort of impact on people. And it was a really proud moment, actually. If not surreal, but very proud.
I'm sure you're getting more of that now, aren't you? Now you know, you're a household name more with boxing. People will be stopping you, you know, getting an autograph, that those kind of things.
Yeah, he asked me for a selfie.
Actually, you are, autograph, old fashioned, but yeah, selfie.
Yeah, no, that is happening a lot more, and it still surprises me because, you know, I'm just Hannah, and I'm a little girl from a tiny little village called Luss in Scotland, and I grew up in the middle of nowhere on a sheep farm, and now people are like, "Hey, Hannah, it's so nice to meet you. Can we get a picture?" And I'm just like, "This is mad." Yeah, but it's a real pleasure, and I'm glad that people, you know, feel. That's the other thing. I want people to always feel like they can just come and talk to me, because I'm just like anybody else. You know, I just come and say hi. And that's one of the most important things, I think, because if you become a role model as a sports person and all sport, like people who are at the top of their game, they are technically, they fit the category of role model, but it's how you perform and how you act about it that's so important. And I think for me, when I was a kid, like there weren't that many female role models, especially in sport, like not that many at all. So it wasn't as easy to access them or speak to them or, you know, follow their journey or anything. So nowadays it is. So I always feel like I say to people, just drop me a message. If you have any questions, say hi. I don't mind. You know, it's not a problem.
Who's your sporting role model?
Venus and Serena Williams, they're legends, absolute legends. Not gonna lie. Those two are incredible, but also somebody actually probably my peers, Laura Muir. She's a Scottish runner, a long distance runner, and she's incredible. I've never seen anybody suddenly pull out this like eighth gear when she's on the track. It's just phenomenal to watch. So those are the kind of people that inspire me, yeah.
And I suppose in terms of next steps for you in your boxing career, Hannah, you know, is there a unification fights, these kind of things coming up?
So obviously I've got two of the five belts at my weight. I want to have all five. Yeah, that's my goal. I don't think any other world champion is going to ever sit there and say they don't want the other ones. And I want the other ones. That's my focus. I want to unify the division. I even want to potentially become a two-weight world champion. You know, so these are all options that I'm thinking about and working hard towards. And, you know, my next, looking towards the next fight, September, October time, either Scotland or London, because obviously been in London 11 years. It's like my second home. So I feel like I should share my time. Some in Scotland and some down here. We shall see what's happening next. But we've got my promotional team have something penciled into the diary. So yeah, now just getting ready, working towards hopefully unifying at some point.
Is it easy to do that? Because you look at other, I'm thinking about Tyson Fury now and Anthony Joshua, and it's always difficult to get people to, you know, unify the division, isn't it? Is it, yeah. You know, how difficult is it to do that?
So I think it's the one difference between male and female boxing is that there's less of us. And we are on the women's side, we're much more inclined, a bit like the UFC, to have the best fight the best much more regularly. That happens. It just, the turnaround is a lot more common than it is in the guys. The guys, they kind of move around each other. Oh, we're not fighting this time.
Yeah, it never happens, is it?
No, but the difference is that they make enough money to not have to. Mm. And that is one of the main issues, is that, you know, it's an incredible thing where Devin Haney, he's just unified over in Australia against Kambosos, right? He's got the Ring Magazine belt, he's got all the belts, and, you know, like, he's leaving in his private jet. You know, when a girl unifies the division, there's no private jets. No. That's not, we just don't get paid anywhere near the same as what the guys do for at world title level. It's just not the same. Mm-hmm. So that's something that, you know, I'm pushing for. I'm pushing for purses to be raised, because at the end of the day, I do just as much hard work as the guys. Mm-hmm. I bleed the same. I sweat the same. I'm at risk of injury just the same as they are. And the only difference you can argue is that we do 2 minute rounds and they do 3 minute rounds. And my argument is we should still be allowed to do 3 minute rounds, or at least 12 twos. But, you know, that's another argument for another day. But at the end of the day, we're both putting ourselves at risk for the sport that we love. So we should all be equally paid.
Fantastic. And as I always ask my guests some questions here about maybe going back to, I suppose, the start of your career and any advice that you'd give yourself.
I think the advice to give myself is to stop trying to be like other people. And I think that's a thing that we do in any part of our careers, or anything we choose to do, even at school. We desperately want to fit in and we want to be like everybody else so we don't stand out. But actually, you know, because when I first started, I didn't come from an amateur background. So I was never going to look like an amateur boxer. But I was desperate to look like them and be like them. But suddenly, as I went through my early stages of my career, I realized actually I was pretty happy being myself, and my own style is my own style and nobody else has got Hannah's style. So, you know, it took me a little bit longer to accept that and actually start to appreciate what I was good at instead of trying to be like everybody else. And I think that's probably my best bit of advice I would give my earlier self. Give myself a lot less stress.
Fantastic. Well, thanks so much for coming on the show today. Just before we go, what bassoon have you got?
I've got a Fox.
Me too.
Yeah, Fox 601. Just to get super geeky.
Yeah. Fantastic.
I love my bassoon. I'm super attached to it. It's like the one thing that, like, you know, it sits beside my world titles, and the two of them are very equally loved. So, yeah.
Because I see a belt in the background there. Do you have a like your world titles on, you know, displayed in your bedroom or in your house? Or
yeah, so I have all my belts. I'm looking to get a new stand to actually keep them all in, so that they can all just sit there nicely. Because they come in these amazing big silver metal boxes that look like, you know, you're carrying some serious gear inside them. You know, but they're so heavy to travel around with, and, you know, I just want to put them in a nice stand and keep them there looking shiny and pretty. I look at them every morning just to go, yeah, they're mine.
You go, yeah.
Yeah, that's the one.
Fantastic. Well, thanks again, Hannah. Really appreciate you know, making time to coming on. Thanks for being so honest and reflective as well. Really appreciate it.
No, thank you so much for having me. It's been a great chat. It's been really good.
Many thanks to Hannah. In this series, we are proud to once again be in partnership with Independent School Management Plus, an international school magazine, the leading authority and voice for professionals in independent and international education worldwide. So if you'd like to watch the video of today's podcast, please head over to schoolmanagementplus.com. And if you're interested in partnering with Pursue through our suite of individual team and school-wide coaching culture awards, please send me an email at hello@pursue.com or visit our website, pursue.com. Bye for now. Take care and look forward to speaking to you again soon.